The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We want to get to the bottom of who exactly is responsible for the shooting yesterday. Who's responsible? Well, I have a very clear answer for you. And a lot of people aren't going to like it. Oh, no. Maybe we shouldn't. We're going to say it next. Right now, we begin.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. Today, we're going to talk about the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And who exactly is responsible for the shooting yesterday?
And if the pre-show meetings are any indication, this should go well. I think it's going to go really well. You're in a great mood, and I think this is the time to address a sensitive topic.
Truth? Nothing but the truth?
I don't understand what you're saying there, Stu.
I can't think of a better time. This is one of those things that either leads to an incredibly great show.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's
okay. So this what you're saying is Glenn is in a show. This is Glenn is in a bad mood. Now you usually preface some of our best shows with that. Glenn is in a bad mood.
Yep. Sometimes it's a bad mood, and one of these times it will be the final episode of the program.
Here's the sound from Virginia and the baseball diamond yesterday. This is what it sounded like if you happen to be. Now, this video was taken by a guy who just happened to be walking by. He's down on the ground with his camera by the fence. And I want you to listen to what he says here in a second.
Is that? Do we know where he's at?
Listen to this.
I assume people have been calling 911 already.
Okay. Notice that all of them, those in the background and this guy, the other guys say, two of them, is anybody called 911? And the other guy responds, I assume somebody has. They all have phones. All they're doing is videotaping what's happening. You want to talk about first responder? Before you video something. Maybe you should call 911. Maybe you should say, you know what? The video of this is not as important as calling 911. Then turn on your video. Then record it. Today, the New York Times was full-fledged New York Times. Today, the New York Times, today, MSNBC, today, CNN, they're back to their old tricks. It didn't take them long before they started blaming this on the left. I'm sorry, on the right. Before they started blaming this on Donald Trump. Now, if we remember, they blamed the right and Sarah Palin for Gabby Giffords. Because she had released something about districts that needed to be targeted. She used the word targeted. In this atmosphere, with what they're saying, of course that's going to drive. Well, the person who used the gun to shoot Gabby Giffords was a lefty. And nuts was not on the Sarah Palin email list. Let's just put it that way. Didn't see the targeting stuff. It wasn't Sarah Palin. And yet the New York Times wrote this. Conservative and right-wing media were quick on Wednesday to demand forceful condemnation of hate speech and crimes by anti-Trump liberals. They're right. Though there's no sign of incitement as direct as in the Giffords attack, liberals should hold the course, should of course hold themselves to the same standard of decency that they ask of the right. But there is no sign of incitement. Okay. Somebody puts out a political piece and says, we have to target these districts. That's incitement. But Kathy Giffords, Griffin, what is her name? Griffith?
Griffin.
Yeah, it's okay. Griffin. Sorry, she was never a star in my world. I don't know what she did to think she was a star, but she'll never get her career back of that one gig a night on CNN.
Once a year.
On CNN. Anyway, incitement? How about holding a picture of Donald Trump's bloody head? Incitement? How about a play that week in New York City making Caesar look like Donald Trump and having a bloody assassination in Central Park? So much so that the sponsor, what was it, Bank of America, pulls out, unsolicited, pulls out and says, this is over the top. So much so that even the New York Times critic says, this is over the line. But there's no incitement there. No. Nothing as strong as we need to target these districts.
And that is legitimately a quote. This is from the New York Times, not in 2011, but today. In 2011, when Jared Lee Loeffner opened fire in a supermarket parking lot, grievously wounding Representative Gabby Giffords and killing six people, including a nine-year-old girl, the link to political incitement was clear. Before the shooting, Sarah Palin's Political Action Committee circulated a map of targeted electoral districts
that put
Ms. Giffords and 19 other Democrats under stylized crosshairs. This has literally been disproved and debunked for 6 years. And today they're still writing it. Again, this
it
goes
back. It doesn't matter. Those elites, those in the newspaper, this is why I've asked you for years, write a diary. Write a diary. Because your children have absolutely zero chance of reading the truth. Remember, the Tea Party, the biggest American movement of a populist movement, a movement where grassroots takes over and changes the course of an election in 2 years, the Tea Party. That wasn't even put in Time Magazine's Year in Review. Why? Because they don't want records of it. Why put a record of that so we have a hard time diminishing the impact and telling the truth of what really happened? This is a writing and rewriting of American history in real time as historians go back. But I will tell you, I've learned more from the lost diaries of the German people than I have from any history book on what really happened in Germany. Keep a diary. So here's the New York Times saying this today and saying there's no link. Write in your diary and cut out any posts that you have and make sure it's on paper. Cut out any posts that you have and make sure that you have the Kathy Griffin, Griffith, Grifford, that woman,
Grifford, that's it.
Whatever
it,
her
it
name
is,
is.
Kathy Grifford.
Make sure you have the picture of her holding the bloody head 2 weeks before this shooting. Make sure you have the story of Shakespeare in the Park 1 week, days before this shooting. And then I want you to write this. These things did not cause this crazy lunatic to shoot. It wasn't. Make sure you put that he was a Bernie Sanders volunteer. But then I want you to make sure that you put Bernie Sanders and what he said yesterday. Here's what he said yesterday.
Madam President, I have just been informed that the alleged shooter at the Republican baseball practice this morning is someone who apparently volunteered on my presidential campaign. I am sickened by this despicable act, and let me be as clear as I can be. Violence of any kind is unacceptable in our society, and I condemn this action in the strongest possible terms.
Stop. I'm asking you one question. I want you to listen to this one question and only answer this question. Do you believe that he believes what he just said? Pat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jeffy, do you believe that he believes what he just said, that he condemns violence?
I'm not sure.
Wow.
I mean, his actions from last time this happened put
that's
that
not
in
the
doubt.
Question.
That's not the doubt. The literal words he said, yes. I mean, he does not want violence. He does condemn it.
He has a long history of condemning violence. However, question number two, is he a political human being? Pat?
Yes.
Jeffy?
Yes.
Stu?
100%.
Which explains what he said after
Kathy Grifford,
whatever. After what he said about the other shooting,
yeah, Jared Lee Loeffner, he raised money off of it. He said he blamed it on right-wing reactionaries. This horrendous act of violence is not some kind of strange aberration for this area, where it appears threats and acts of violence are part of the political climate. Nobody can honestly express surprise that such a tragedy finally occurred.
Okay, stop. I believe that yesterday, Bernie Sanders, when he found out that this was one of his guys that was a campaign volunteer, I believe he was horrified that somebody could say that. Not for political reasons. I believe Bernie Sanders would not want somebody shooting at Congress members.
Of course.
Period. Now, we don't get that respect from the press. We don't get that respect. They won't give that to us. They're still relitigating a false claim of a shooting that happened by a crazy person on the left. They're still blaming that on Sarah Palin and relitigating that today. They're still on MSNBC. There was a tweet that went out and said, Donald Trump is responsible for this. I'm going to give you two answers to the question on who's responsible. Who's responsible? I'm going to give you two answers, and both of them are absolutely true, but both of them are separate and apart from each other. You want to belly up to the big boy table? You want to hear things that that everybody will tell you today to make you feel good? Then you should tune to another show. If you want to hear the truth, stick around. I'll share it next.
I have decided I will stand for you, and I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand.
Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I hesitate to play this because it made my blood pressure go up, and I'm about ready to pop. I swear to you, I think I am a blueberry, that I have to go to Willy Wonka's juice press. My blood pressure is through the roof on listening to the rhetoric of the left. Now, I'm playing this for a reason, because I want to tell you who's responsible. But I want to remind you what they said on Gabby Giffords. Listen.
There's been so much vitriol flung at her by the Tea Party people. You know, her opponent was a Tea Party candidate, and the signs that were up around town accusing her of horrible things. You know, when people make these kinds of comments, you know, it pushes some folks over the edge.
She was shot by a violent act. Of course, a person using a gun, breaking up a political meeting with a gun, bringing one to a political event, which we saw a lot of during the demonstrations. People carrying firearms to political events. The violent level of the right wing in this country.
After the 2010 elections, when you had the Tea Party elect a whole lot of their supporters to the United States House of Representatives, and you had town hall meetings that they tried to take over, and you saw some of their conduct at those town hall meetings, what the Tea Party has done is they have taken it to a different level.
Breathe deep.
And disagree with you, that you're not just wrong, you're the enemy.
When the health care vote was coming to the floor of the House, and when this was all heating up, Palin tweeted out a message on Twitter saying, common sense conservatives don't retreat, instead reload. And she referred folks to her Facebook page. On that Facebook page was a list of Democratic members she was putting in crosshairs. And Gabrielle Giffords was one of those in the crosshairs.
The guy may be acting alone, but he's influenced, he's empowered, he's legitimized by those who are talking in this way, and also by the talk shows that are on and on and on all day that say, hey, these people aren't not just Democrats, they're socialists. They're the government is trying to, you know, take everything from you.
Yes,
we got to go back and get them. And Justice Holmes said about 50 years ago, you cannot cry fire in a crowded theater. That is, there are some limits on free speech given the circumstances. And I would say to Sarah Palin and the Tea Party, you cannot yell ready, aim, fire when there's a crowded political situation.
Okay.
We all...
Yeah,
can
and
you,
nobody
can,
did.
Yeah, nobody did. Can you yell assassin in a crowded park and show somebody dressed and acting like President Trump and have thousands of people watch an emotional play while the president is assassinated and cloak it as Shakespeare? Can you do that?
I guess.
Can you be a comedian and hold a severed head of Donald Trump with blood all over it? Is that okay? Can you do that? Is there a limit on speech on that? Now, my answer is no. There's not a limit on speech. And in fact, the only speech that you have to stand up for is the speech that you abhor. Is it bad form? Would I ever do that? Do you joke about assassinating a president? I had a problem with it with George Bush. I have a problem with it with Barack Obama. I'd have a problem with it if it was President Clinton. I'd have a problem with it now, with the two instances that the left did last week. Now, did that lead to the shooting? The answer next.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Okay. I'm going to show you some pictures, Stu and Pat. You can describe them before I get to the real culprit of the shooting yesterday. And
so you got that Kathy Griffin
holding the head of Donald Trump.
That's that one.
You've got that's the Shakespeare in the Park murder of the Trump-like character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. What does it look like?
What's it look like? It looks like they're killing Donald Trump in a park.
Yeah, and it got blood all over him, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Notice, does it look similar to the Kathy?
Yes. Covered in blood.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. What's this one?
See, from one of the riots in Berkeley,
yes.
Right? It says "Kill Trump."
Spray painted up on a pillar or a wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is this one?
More riots.
More riots.
More riots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what were the riots doing? What were they doing? Who
protesting
are those
Trump?
People?
Yep.
Is that anti-Trump people?
Yeah.
Is that a effigy being hung there? I can't even tell what that is.
No, that's a guy up on
a
turned over garbage can where they have lit the street on fire, and he's got a mask and he is preaching to the people there more violence.
Got it.
Okay. So these things have happened on the left, all of them except for the Antifa. That has happened several times, but the others have happened this week or late last week. Okay. Nobody's mentioning these in the media today. You're not seeing the pictures of Kathy on on CNN. Oh, no. You're not hearing anybody talk about Shakespeare in the Park today. Oh, no. You're not going to hear that. So what am I going to say? Well, let me tell you what brought this all about. Let me tell you who's responsible for the shooting. When all is said and done, let me tell you exactly who is responsible for the shooting. And I want to take this and I want to put it in a lockbox. You know, where all the Al Gore Social Security money is. I'm going to put that in a lockbox and we're going to lock it away. And forever, those people responsible will be in that box, because there's two things I want to tell you. So let's open up the lockbox. Who do we put in there? The shooter. Period. End of story. The shooter. He was living in his van for the last couple of weeks. He is a violent guy who has a history of family violence. His stepdaughter wanted to get out of his control so badly, she poured gasoline on herself and set herself on fire. He has a history of gunplay. He is a crazy, dangerous man. Am I going to put him in there along with Kathy? No, just him. How about Shakespeare in the Park? No, just him. Well, how about the Antifa movement? No, just him. He's the guy who got up in the morning and apparently got up several times over the last few days and weeks. While, I mean, it was a big apartment in the back of his van, loser. But he got up and he paced back and forth in the back of his van. What am I going to do? He went, he got the gun. He got the bullets. He went to the park. He asked, are these Republicans or are these Democrats? He went to the baseball diamond and he's the one who pulled the trigger. Period. End of story. Close the lid. Put a lock on it. That is the truth. Today I saw Michelle Malkin retweet a story, I don't even remember, from MSNBC, I think. Look at my Twitter feed, see who it was from. Because I retweeted it. And she said it was a story, somebody was blaming Donald Trump for the shooting yesterday. That Donald Trump is responsible. Now remember, I have the lockbox over here. Who's responsible? Who's in the lockbox, Pat?
The shooter.
Okay. I know it was hard to follow because I had so many people in there. It was just the shooter.
The shooter.
Now, I put that in a lockbox because we're going to open it and add some more people to it?
No. Because, no, you already shoved it away.
Okay, shoved it away. It's locked. There's no one else responsible for the shooting yesterday. Is that clear?
Yes.
Is that clear? That's a lockbox. It's away.
So.
It's in a safe. No one else is responsible. What did Michelle Malkin tweet, the retweet story?
I don't see a Michelle Malkin tweet, but there's a tweet about from the Washington Times about heated rhetoric that led to the Alexandria shooting.
Okay. And the heated rhetoric, they're blaming Donald Trump.
Yeah. Donald Trump partially to blame.
Partially to blame.
And okay. That comes from Mark Sanford, by the way.
Right. And Michelle Malkin said, look at this discredited GOP guy who is now blaming Donald Trump. Okay.
The quote does not seem to be as clear as that he was actually blaming Donald Trump, by
the
way.
But right. Still. Okay. So what did I tweet? What did I say?
You said Trump is responsible as much as I am. Rachel Maddow, The New York Times, we all are. What choice will we make today?
Okay, so
deeds, not words.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
Well, especially because you have a lockbox.
All right, I got a lockbox.
You've made it. You've made a very clear point that the shooter is the only,
one responsible.
How can you say that?
Correct.
It's almost as if you're about to make some nuanced point that actually involves some listening.
That kindergartners will not understand.
Oh, but you got our audience. Are they filled with kindergartners?
No, they're not.
I don't think so.
No, they're not.
No.
They're intelligent people. Mm. And so that's why I'm going to make this point. Now let's go to point number two. Have you ever heard of the broken windows theory? What's the broken windows theory?
Rudy Giuliani. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Giuliani used it to clean up New York. What is that theory?
Theory being that if people kind of see dumb things,
broken windows,
graffiti, broken windows, stupid things like that, they're going to be more likely to commit crimes because they think no one cares.
Right.
So fix those things and you'll start cleaning up the streets.
If you are walking down the street and you see a neighborhood where all the windows are broken out and it's all in disrepair, the average person will pick up a rock or is likely to pick up a rock and throw and break another window in a house full of broken windows. However, the average person will never pick up a rock and throw it through a window in a neighborhood where there are no broken windows. It's the broken window theory. What does it mean, Stu?
Well, as it was applied there, it meant, you know, you need to have these, you need to clean these things up. And if you have a neighborhood without broken windows, people won't be tempted to
why they don't even think about it.
No, yeah.
They don't even think about it because they're not bad people. Okay. However, some of us have an instinct to do do things, and more importantly, criminals will prey on those areas because they think no one cares. And so that opens up to the most nefarious among us to take control and to do whatever they want because they think no one cares. Okay. Broken windows theory. If I said to you, I want a president who is walking around stage mocking Tea Partiers by calling them teabaggers. Do you want that?
Mm-mm.
Do you want a president who says rough him up, you know, throw him outside in the cold and take his coat from him because he'll figure out what's right then? Do we want a president doing that? No, we don't want either of those presidents. We don't want either of those presidents. We'll accept those presidents because America has been walking down a street with more and more broken windows. And what are those broken windows? More and more politicians and more people, quite frankly, like me. Just leave everybody else out of it. Just make it me. Because Glenn Beck was on television at Fox saying crazy things. And he is opening up. Well, you know what? There's some truth to that. I'm not responsible for any of this. But yet I am responsible in my own way for my own things, just like you are when you get on and respond in kind. You're picking up a rock and you're breaking a window. What is Facebook? What is Twitter? That is the worst neighborhood in America. When you read that, people are vile, they are crude, they are mean, they devalue other people. There's no kindness on Facebook, or very little. There's no kindness on Twitter. That is a neighborhood of nothing but broken windows. And we are more inclined to pick up a rock and throw it at that other avatar that isn't really a person. And what does that do? That makes somebody else want to pick up a rock and break another window. Who's in the lockbox again? All the American people and all the people on the left?
No,
or
the shooter.
The shooter
just,
is.
Just
that's
the shooter.
Right. Mm-hmm. Just the shooter.
He's also in there with Facebook and Twitter, right?
No.
Oh, it's just him by himself?
It's just him by himself in a lockbox in a safe.
Jeffy's not in there with him?
Can't be changed. Nobody, well, Jeffy's in there too, but nobody else is in that. He's the only one responsible. The question is, will we take responsibility at all for throwing any stones that leads to a society that is not kind, is not gracious, that looks at the opposing point of view as the enemy? There are bad people in America. I believe, and I never believed this before, and I have nothing to back it on up, and I'm hoping I am wrong. I'm hoping these numbers are way too big. They may be too big, they may be too small. I don't know, but I hope it's no more than 10% of both sides that do want a revolution, that do want to duke it out, that do believe we're in a civil war. Grab your guns. Let's just get this over. But that leaves 80% of us who do not want anything to do with that. You get a hit of dopamine every time you pick up a rock and throw it. Feels good. I've said to you before, it's going to be this audience that saves the republic, but only if you choose. I said there's going to come a time when you're going to want to go and everybody's going one way and you're going to have to stop and say, don't go that way. That time is right now. And you may not get anyone else to go with you, but you go the other way. Do not pick up the rock. That doesn't mean surrender. That doesn't mean don't tell the truth. Here's the truth. The shooter is responsible by himself, not the gun, not the bullets, not the gun industry, not the NRA, not the left, not the right, not the president, not the former president, not Hillary Clinton, not Antifa. No one. The shooter is responsible, period. But here's the truth as well. We are all accountable for our own actions. And we are all creating an atmosphere where people just think, you know what? There's no rules and nobody cares. I care. I care because I want a country left for my children and my grandchildren to grow up in. I want an end to chaos. And the best way to end the chaos is to end it in your own life first. And when you see rock throwing, do not pick up a rock. Help repair the neighborhood. I hope to share some more on how to repair the neighborhood. We have Barry Loudermilk on with an amazing story. You want to talk about divine providence. It happened yesterday. We could have lost 10% of the GOP. Do you know what the country would be like today if that guy would have killed 10% of the GOP in Congress? Do you imagine what this country would be facing today? It would be a different world. Remember I said you'll wake up on a Monday and by Friday your country will be different? That could have happened yesterday. Divine providence yesterday. We'll talk to Barry Loudermilk, who was there and shot at several times, coming up.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, here's what you're not going to hear. You're going to hear the bad thing about the New York Times, but you're also going to hear this from the New York Times. This is their opinion page. The indigenous American berserk strikes again. Since turnabout is fair play, New York Times, since turnabout is fair play, it's tempting to subject the left to the same excoriation to which it subjected the right 6 years ago. Kathy Griffin and a bloody decapitated Trump. Trump is Shakespeare's murdered Caesar in Central Park. Kristen Gildebrand's F-bombs, the resistance, all markers of the same culture of self-righteous loathing that supposedly incubates political violence. So much of the left-wing thought is a kind of playing with fire by people who don't even know what fire is, that fire is hot, wrote George Orwell. So, turnabout is fair play or not. It was foul of the left to accuse the Tea Party of inciting Loeffner's rampage, including Bernie Sanders, all the more so since the evidence for the claim was so strained. It's wrong of us to do it now. From the New York Times.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
We have an amazing story to tell what I believe is divine providence. I want you to think of one thing. Imagine what America would be like today if yesterday the leadership of the GOP and the majority of the GOP, 10% of the GOP in Congress were dead. If we had coffins that we were facing today instead of one coffin of the shooter and one still in critical condition. What would the conversation be like today? I've often said, you're going to wake up on a Monday, and by Friday, your country will be completely different. I believe that is coming. But I do believe we saw divine providence happen yesterday, so that didn't happen this week. Barry Loudermilk was there and shot at several times. Representative Congressman Barry Loudermilk is on with us right now. I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we are one. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one. The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program. Congressman Barry Loudermilk is joining us now. Congressman, how are you?
I'm doing well, Glenn. Appreciate you having us on and, you know, giving the coverage for this story. And what a surreal moment. And your opening monologue there, I haven't really thought of it from that perspective, but I can attest God was on that field with us yesterday.
And that's what I wanted to talk to you about, Barry. First of all, how is your wife and family?
They're doing well. It's amazing. Of course, my cell phone was in my chief of staff's car in the parking lot. When the shooting began, I was on the field near home plate. When the second shot went out, we knew, you know, something was going on. One of the players said he's got a gun. Several of the players went into the dugout. I went outside of the field and took cover behind a shed. I wanted to get to a position to see where the shooter was. So with all this playing out, I had no communications other than just voice. When I got done, my chief of staff called my wife. She didn't know what was going on. But my wife immediately, got my three children all grown. They got together and I talked to them yesterday. And then last night at 2:30 in the morning, my daughter and her husband showed up at our apartment, in Washington. They drove all night long to be here for the game tonight. Just to show support.
Wow. Barry, let me just ask you this question first. Who's responsible for the shooting yesterday?
Well, you know, obviously a deranged, demented individual was the one who carried it out. But I think it is it's an attitude. It's sensationalism. It's demonization of people that is going on for political purposes.
And do you,
you know, we've always,
do you believe, Barry, that that is from the left only or the left and the right as well?
I think there's cases of that coming from both. Clearly, recently, there has been more coming from the left at this point because, the
power,
the president. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to change things. The left has made a lot of progress in the last 8-10 years. We're now in a position to begin to reverse that. And instead of just dealing with the issues, let's get to the podium. Let's get in front of the House and let's debate the policy of each issue. Many have resorted to demonizing the other side. There are people back in my district carrying around signs in the back of their vehicles saying, Loudermilk is killing me because we're trying to repeal Obamacare. When that type of rhetoric continues and it continues and you get somebody who is unstable to start with, they start believing these things, then they take action like this gentleman did yesterday. I found out yesterday evening, he had been planning this for a while. He had been stalking that field. And last night was his last opportunity. That was our last practice of that field. This morning we had planned to be practicing at the National Stadium as we do every year. Of course, that's been called off this morning, but we're still going to play the game this evening. But that was his last opportunity, and he had been planning this for a while. And when you read his Facebook page, there are things as bad or worse that is posted on mine and other members all across Congress.
Barry, let me take you now to divine providence. Not only was this guy crazy, this guy was a violent figure for a very long time. His stepdaughter or his one of the foster daughters actually set herself on fire, poured gasoline on herself, set herself on fire to get away from him. He was a horrible human being, but had a history of gunplay and violence in his life. But I will tell you, I've seen some bad shots in my life, but for as many targets that were out on that field and to have a rifle, I believe divine providence played a role in keeping, you know, people safe yesterday. It is remarkable the number of rounds that were fired and the low number of people that were hit.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, I witnessed it myself. This guy was not just rapid firing. He was choosing his targets. When we were finally, we identified there was a shooter there. He was over by the third base fence. That gate was locked. He couldn't get in. We all ran toward the first base side. Many of the members dove in the dugout. I went out as I was exiting the field, a round hit the ground to my left, about a foot or two from my left foot, and then one hit the fence as I was going out. Those were clearly targeted at me. When I took refuge behind this wooden building, I came around, put the building, just a small shed basically, put it between me and where the shooter was at that time. He maneuvered around and got a more clear line of fire to us. But I had the Capitol Police vehicle was about 20 feet in front of me. When I got around the corner, I looked and I saw Matt Micah, one of the baseball staff members that helps us work out. He was laying on the ground on his back with a chest wound. He had been shot in the chest and was bleeding very badly. Myself and one others, every time we tried to advance to go help him, we were driven back by gunfire. I was told last night in a team meeting we had, I'm just focused. We're trying to figure out what can we do. How can we get engaged here? We knew we were being targeted. At one moment, I found out last night, Matt took a second round in his arm as he was laying there. And it appeared that the shooter was trying to shoot underneath that vehicle to hit us. And one of those rounds hit Matt in the arm. As soon as they took down, I was watching, I saw him take down the shooter. The Capitol Police were truly heroes. One of the officers actually moved away from the vehicle, went into the parking lot, and exposed himself to draw the fire away from us. When he finally took the gunman down, I ran over to Matt. I could not believe he was still alive at that point, as bad as that bullet hole was in his chest. And I laid my hand on his head, and I prayed for him. And last evening, Speaker Ryan called me. And he said, I just want to tell you, Matt's going to be okay. It's a miracle. That round missed his heart, just barely nicked a lung, shattered some ribs. He lost a tremendous amount of blood, but he's going to make it, and they expect a full recovery. That's a miracle in itself. When you see how bad he was laying there, shots just barely missing people. Look, the fact that we had two officers there, had not those two protection detail guys for Scalise been at the field, it would have been as you described earlier today. The discussion day would be a lot of former members of Congress.
Barry, the news of Scalise yesterday was confusing. He was in critical condition, then he was stable, then he went in for surgery, and then he came out in critical condition. The last I heard is he's still in critical condition. Do you have any insight on how he's faring?
No, that's the last I've heard. I checked again this morning. We have a very active prayer group that is in Congress. We have a Wednesday night church service in the Capitol building every week. There are dozens of Bible studies. There are numerous prayer chains. They were all activated. Last night we were told to continue to pray for Steve, that he still needed a lot of prayer. And that's the last.
Is that because he lost so much blood, or do you know he was shot in the hip? So did he hit an artery?
I don't know if he hit an artery. Another act of divine providence was Brad Winstrup, who is
a doctor
in the Army with combat experience. He's one of our ball players. As soon as we were able to be able to move, I went over to Matt. He went out directly to Scalise. He and Senator Flake. I was able to get a med kit out of the Capitol Police vehicle. So I was able to take him a med kit, and I could tell Scalise had bled a lot. I think some of the concern is where it went in, it damaged some of his organs as well. And so the concern was stopping the bleeding. They said that he has actually received several transfusions at this point. So he's not out of the woods yet. Divine providence is not an instantaneous or one-time thing. It's continuous. And we need another act of that with these two that are in the hospital.
What should the conversation in America be today?
I think it should be of civility. It should be, we are one nation under God. We need to be able to refocus our debate on issues, on policy, not personality. And we need to take a strong look at how do we rebuild our nation and how do we make sure that we're secure. I told a news media outlet yesterday wanted to talk about gun control. And my response to them was, I'll talk to you about gun control when you get shot at and you don't have a gun to defend yourself. But these are the things that I already have some groups out there taking that comment on both sides and running it out of proportion. That's the type of thing we need to stop. We need to stop monetizing our dysfunction as a nation. There are too many groups out there that will take something, twist it, and turn it just to raise money, to incite people. Look, and we also need a re-education of some people out there to the Constitution, what it truly means. What is the actual role of government? But that needs to be a civil discourse going forward. And I think if you can set aside the demonization, the rhetoric, and get down to policy, we win every time.
Barry Loudermilk, congressman who was shot at several times yesterday and is safe. We have you and your family and all of the families of those involved and all of the injured in our prayers. We thank you so much, sir. And thank you for your service, and thank you for being on the program today.
Glenn, thank you, and you're a good friend. I appreciate what you do.
You bet. God bless.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mm-hmm. I want to give you a tip on how to make things better. And it's something that I'm working with the staff bit by bit on, and something that I want to bring you in on, because this is not something just for us. This is something for all Americans. And the best way to describe them are these behavioral scientists that I've been studying and trying to reach out to and work with. They don't believe this will work because it's all in the power of the individual. I believe that it will work because it's all within the power of the individual. And they look at this as, well, people have to find this and they have to do it and they have to really be informed on it. And I look at it as, yeah, but I have a gathering of 8 million friends every day. I have a website that if we can start doing this and we can start modeling this, we can affect 50 million people every month. I think that is a good thing. I want to fully understand it before I bring it to you in its entirety. But I last night, because I thought it was appropriate, we were talking about the shooting, and then it went into a couple of theorists. One of them was a KGB agent who said the United States is going to break up. And one historian said that we're going to break up into several different tribes. I think there's like 8 or 10 tribes. And he said they're the old historic tribes. They're the, you know, there's the Mountain West people. There are the Pacifica people. There are the Texans and the, you know, the Southwest kind of people. There is the South and the North Atlantic. And he kind of draws these maps out and says, look, this is what's happening. We're falling back into tribes. And basically what he's saying is what's happening in the EU is going to happen to us. Because that's what the real tension is in the EU. It's not about the monetary system or money or anything else. It's about people feeling as though their culture is being lost or denigrated or just usurped. So how do we talk to each other? I want to go over that. And also David Barton is going to join us. He's good friends with most of the congressmen that were on the field yesterday. And he is also working on something that is starting to have some really exciting early results of something that we're doing with youth and interns. When I say youth, 18 to 25 year olds that are at Mercury One this week. We'll tell you about that next.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Here's Chuck Todd yesterday. Listen to this.
And guess what? We in the media, we have a role to play too. We need to be calling out caustic rhetoric when it's there, and not fighting back with caustic rhetoric. Whataboutism is among the worst instincts of partisans on both sides. Mm. When somebody says this, they say, well, what about that? That's not the issue. Hopefully everybody is looking in the mirror tonight and going,
little introspection from Chuck Todd there.
I think Chuck actually, nice. I mean, I don't that's always nice. Agree with Chuck by any stretch of the imagination. But my interactions with Chuck Todd is he tries, you know, and he has glimmers of introspection to where he's like, okay, wait a minute. I mean, I think he sees the world like most reporters do because they live in a bubble and they don't see it from our perspective, just like many of us don't see it from their perspective because we don't walk a day or a month or a year in their shoes. And we are living in two vastly different worlds.
And there are thousands of examples we could bring up today of media members doing it the wrong way.
Yes.
You know, another one we should bring up that is doing it the right way, yet again, Jake Tapper.
Yes.
Now, think of it this way. It was easy for us in 2011 after Gabby Giffords to say, well, you can't blame the entire movement. It's just this one person who did this. It was easy for us to do that. Okay. Today, it's easy for Democrats to say, well, you can't blame Bernie Sanders or the left. It was just one person. It's easy for them. It's hard for us today to do the opposite.
Especially right? After Shakespeare in the Park, Kathy Griffin, you know, Antifa movement, yeah. All of the stuff that is going on, it's very difficult to say. And it feels good say, well, what about?
We have the difficult task today. It should be easy for the media today or the left today to say, hey, this is not about one person, but we should, you know, we should obviously watch our rhetoric, but separate from the fact that this is one person responsible. We should point out, though, in 2011, it was Jake Tapper on television saying, the shooter's motives remain unclear. One acquaintance from 2007 described him as a liberal. It was Jake Tapper on television saying that the investigation into all of Jared Lee Loeffner's writings showed he was obsessed with Gabby Giffords 3 years before the Sarah Palin Target ad was produced. 3 years previous to that, he was obsessed with this person. And of course, all the stuff about how grammar was a global conspiracy and all of that other stuff that showed that it was not politically motivated at all. But he stood up then to do it when it may have been difficult, when it was easy for the media to blame the conservatives.
Right.
He stood up and said, no. And we should be that same person now. We should be the people saying, wait a minute, this is one person and they are responsible. But we could talk about it in a grander context as a moment to kind of let's examine the way we do these things on a daily basis. But that is separate, as you pointed out. It's in a lockbox by itself. This one person is responsible.
So how are we going to change the course? The only way to do it is one person at a time. As individuals, we have to change. We have to educate ourselves and we have to make a choice on how we're going to react. And we have to be, we can't just, we get hits of dopamine and you can't just get a hit of dopamine for throwing rocks at people and then expect to go cold turkey. You need to replace dopamine with dopamine. So how can you feel good? Let me give you a couple of things. First of all, thank you so much for being a part of Mercury One's Nazarene Fund. We are still active and there's much more to do. And we're about to make an announcement, hopefully soon, that will show an expansion of the Nazarene Fund, and we need your help on that. Mercury One, also with disaster relief. There is a story from, and I brought David Barton in, he's on the board of directors. I brought him in. There's a story from the Mountain Press. Now, this just came out June.
Right.
Gatlinburg, about 50 students at Pi Beta Phi Elementary School have been taking home a bag filled with food every weekend since shortly after November 2016 fires, courtesy of a nonprofit in Texas. This is our front page. Mercury One, a humanitarian aid and education organization founded in 2011 by author and media host Glenn Beck, assists communities as needs arise. The website featured a post on November 29th, the day after the fires, alerting followers for the disasters. Representatives provide multiple updates and accepted donations while simultaneously working with locals to assess early needs. They came looking and asking, what can we do? How can we help? They wanted to do something tangible. How much will it cost? Where is it going? They gave around $6,000 in gift cards immediately. They went and got that, said Brenda Sturbins of Mercury One. Sturbins, who serves as executive pastor of New Hope Church in Kodak, worked with other Mercury One and other organizations in the day after the fires. More than 6 months later, Sturbins is still working with Mercury One. It's about 50 bags every week filled with jars of peanut butter, crackers, jerky, Gatorade. We have a team of people weekly who come in and put this together. Blah, 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 blah.
I will say jerky Gatorade does not sound like a good flavor.
Right. Yeah, well, it's cheap. Yeah. So, David, this story ran. Tell me the letter you got from this story.
Well, the letter was really interesting because the story ran, and as I mentioned to you, it kind of reminded me, and that's what you've got there in front of you.
Yep.
It was kind of like Jesus with the 10 lepers. He healed 10 of them. Only one came back to say thank you.
Listen to this.
This lady.
Listen to this. One of my three daughters are students at an elementary school in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. For months, they have each been bringing home a bag of food and snacks every weekend. I had no idea where it came from. At first, I was embarrassed, but I'm a single mom of three, and we lost everything in the fires, so that didn't last long. I appreciate this so much. So did my daughters. Because Gatorade and individual fruit cups are a luxury, it seems like such a small thing, but the impact made in our lives was sustainable, was substantial. When I saw on the front page of the paper, I literally started crying and immediately felt the need to reach out and express my very sincere appreciation. So I wanted, David and I wanted to get on today and say to you, thank you. Thank you. All of the things that Mercury One does is because of you. And you may not see it, and we're going to get better at showing you the results and telling you the results because you need the hit of dopamine. And if you want to help and you want to get involved, we'd love for you to actually help, but we really need your help financially. And you can become a member. You can give $5 if that's all you have. You can give 25 cents if that's all you have. $5 goes a very long way, but this is the kind of people who help. We had an expert come in recently and talk to us about the foundation, and they were doing an audit of our systems and everything else. And their big, you know, 501c3 person, they said, how many donors do you have? And how much money have you given out? Blah, blah, blah. And we told them, and they said, how many donors do you have? We told them the number of donors, and David, they're right. Their yeah. eyes opened up. They said, how many? And we told them, and they said, those are like $5 and $10 donations. We're like, yeah. They have never seen an organization with so many committed people that are all across the country. They literally said to us, that's an army of service. We said, that's what we're trying to build. This came in from a woman, and we've got to send this back. I can't. Dear Mercury One, it would have been 48 years today, way fewer years since he introduced me to Glenn Beck. You'll like him. He talks like you, he said. He was a family therapist and drove all over central Missouri to visit his clients. She's talking about her husband. She heard about the Nazarene Fund, and she just sent us this. Her husband died. She's an OR nurse. Her husband gave her this gold chain, and he gave the gold chain because he wanted to keep her ring. She's an OR nurse, so she had to take off her rings. Wanted her to be able to keep her ring around her during surgery, so she would take her ring off during surgery and put it around her necklace. When he died, his gold ring she put and hung around her neck. She said, this is all I have, but I know he would want it to go to help the Christians in the Middle East. This is who we are. Mm-hmm. This is who we are. We have some pretty amazing things going on this week. David, can you just tell us quickly what's happening with the 18 to 25 year olds that are here?
We have a boatload of 18 to 25 year olds, college age kids, recently out of college, some working on master's, higher degrees, some now teachers, that are in for a 2-week, we call it an intern program. It's a training program. And they come in and they get what they should have been getting in school for the last several decades and haven't. And that is a good dose of history, God, American exceptionalism, Constitution, the apologetics for it. With all the documents, artifacts they go through there, it has been so fun to watch the transformation. They hold this stuff. I mean, we had them yesterday. In 2 weeks, they're different people. And they were holding yesterday letters from George Washington. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't, you know, and just the impression that it makes on them. And so these are kids that go back and they turn their professors upside down. It's really cool.
You share the letter. Do you have that letter? By any chance, the letter from...
I can pull it up real
quick. Yeah, pull it up. There's a letter from somebody who had just watched one of the videos that we had made with your son, and we were talking, I believe it was the one where we were talking about how the founders, there was a deal out that said the founders were all drunks and everything else because they met at pubs, and we talked about the alcohol content, we talked about all the different things that this Huffington Post blog writer, hadn't taken into consideration. Here's the letter that we got.
The first thing we do is when your professor says something you don't think is right, ask him for sources. And when you start pinning professors asking for sources, it becomes embarrassing. She said, I saw your part of the interview with Glenn Beck on The Vault a few days ago. I used that very tactic in my constitutional law class last fall. My professor actually stated that the separation of church and state was written in the Constitution. I also had a textbook that said that the Republican Party was the party of the KKK and that it was the racist party. I showed the professor a photo of the newspaper that you showed regarding white supremacy, vote Democrat. She said that she believed that I had photoshopped the picture. And that was actually, a 1932 campaign poster. In the presidential campaign. And that she made it and photoshopped it. It's very interesting that when I asked these professors about their sources, they just claimed, well, it's a known fact. Or, well, the History Channel did this segment. Yeah. It's absurd that students pay universities thousands of dollars a year for wrong information in some cases. I have a few girls here that are in my youth group and are going to college this fall. I plan to show them this segment tonight. I hope it'll open their eyes like the internship opened mine. She says, that internship changed my life and put me on the path God intended for me. I'm still working at a law firm downtown. I'm finished my undergrad degree. I'm studying for law school. I'm trying to open the door for our firm to have a special division to defend religious liberties, but there's been some pushback. But I hope to be in the near future an attorney who defends the Constitution.
So here's what I want to say to you. First, thank you for supporting Mercury One. David, and thank you for supporting this program. This is our education program, and it's happening all summer long. We will put several kids, I mean hundreds of kids, through this program, and we need your support. You can go to mercuryone.org and just donate. David and I, we've been doing auctions now. You've been doing them since the 1980s. I've been doing them for the last 15 years. There are some things up for auction, including, is it the 14th Amendment? 13th Amendment. The original, there was, you know, several made, the original hand-signed 13th Amendment that is up for auction. There are several things like that that we've never seen before and probably never will again. And I just said to David yesterday, if I had $1 million, we could open a world-class museum tomorrow with what we have and what's on the auction block. And these things are important to be able to get into our culture, to be able to show them firsthand. Like that girl said, I showed that and they said that it was a Photoshop. We must have the originals.
That's right.
We must have the originals or you can discredit everything. We need your help. Please support us. Go to mercuryone.org, mercuryone.org, hit the donate button and help us in education and all that Mercury One is doing and is planning on doing. We need your help. mercuryone.org. Please, if you can, do it today. David, we'll talk to you again. Thank you so much. And I think the students, all of the interns that are in the building are going to be on TV tonight.
Yes, that's
right. And I'm going to be talking to them about what they've learned and what they think of the world. That's tonight, 5 o'clock, only on the Blaze TV. Thanks, David.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. 888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Have you read Twitter and then tried to figure out which side and which time period the responses are from? For instance, the attacks on our president are unprecedented. Which side is saying that, and what time period?
That could be Obama easily.
Yes, easy.
Except it's not. It's President Trump.
You know, everything's unprecedented.
When it's our side. Look, the shooter is the only one responsible for the shooting. We each have a choice with the broken windows theory. Are you going to pick up a rock and throw yet another rock through a window pane? Don't.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America, and welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. The history of assassinations in America is fascinating. Plus, what can we actually do to change the course of the country? We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. I'm just making a list of assassination attempts and assassinations in the United States. It's pretty amazing how many people, up until JFK, how many people were shot and killed, and how many people... how many presidents were shot at? The first one in America was 1835. It was Andrew Jackson. And a guy named Richard Lawrence, who was absolutely out of his mind, crazy,
came up to the president with two pistols. Both of them misfired. And so Jackson took his cane out and beat the guy almost to death, which was nice. But he was put in a mental institution for the rest of his life because he was just nuts. Lincoln was assassinated in 1865, but there were actually three. 64. But there were actually three attempts on his life, two of them in 64. I thought it was 65. It is 1865. Thank you. 1861, Lincoln was in Baltimore. That was thwarted. In 1864, he was on his way home from the soldier's home where he was working during the day, and he was coming home to the White House, and the guy shot him in the head. But the hat apparently was deceiving, and it the top of his head didn't go all the way to the top of his hat, surprisingly, I guess. And it just went through his hat, and they never caught that guy. And then in 1860,
that's amazing.
Yeah, then in 1865, so they tried to kill him three times. He survived two assassination attempts.
Wow.
1881, Garfield was shot by a crazy man. He was actually killed eventually by his doctor. He was shot by a crazy man who was trying to help him, liked Garfield. But he was nuts, and he thought he had written a speech that Garfield had used, which was not mm-hmm. true. He was treated at the White House like garbage because he talked to, I think it was his press secretary or something like that. And he had said, I need to be the ambassador of France, and I need to see Garfield. And the guy said, get out of here.
Yeah, and he really believed that he helped get Garfield elected.
Right.
So he deserved some sort of reward.
Right. And when he was treated by garbage by his underlings like that, he thought Garfield was not the man he thought he was and went and shot him. He shot him. This is before they knew anything about germs or bacteria or anything else. And they would stick their fingers into the side of Garfield, and they were just trolling around looking for that bullet. Imagine that. Wow. A doctor came from Europe and said, hey, there's this new thing called antibiotics and we should sterilize. And the doctor was a control freak and he was outraged. How dare you try to tell me? And he's like, he's dying from infection. No, he's not. He's dying because we have to get this bullet wound. Here, give me that rusty knife. The doctor actually killed him that way. In 1909, McKinley was killed by an anarchist. In 1901, in 1909, Taft was—they had tried to assassinate him on a trip to Mexico.
That was stopped by his security detail.
Right.
Oh, I thought it was stopped because he was overweight.
No, that would be. In 1912, Teddy Roosevelt, they tried to kill him.
That's a fascinating story.
He gave an hour and a half speech.
With a bullet in
his chest. That guy was just amazing.
Incredible.
1928, Hoover was in Chile. An anarchist tried to kill Hoover. 1933, they tried to kill FDR. Again, another anarchist tried to kill him in 33. There was another assassination attempt on his life at the Tehran conference in 1943. The guy who took a shot at him in 33, they think was not shooting at him, but shooting at the mayor of Chicago.
Killed him, too.
Killed the mayor of Chicago. And they think that it was because of the Al Capone arrest. And so FDR just happened to be in the line of fire at the time. It was not an assassination of the president. It was an assassination attempt on the life of the Chicago mayor, but we're not sure of that. Harry Truman, pending the independence of Israel, letter bombs were sent to the president at the White House. And then in 1950, two Puerto Rican pro-independence activists, they went and they tried to kill the president on the steps of the executive mansion across the street. Then John F. Kennedy, Richard Nixon wanted to shoot Nixon, but he had strong security. A few weeks later, the same guy who tried to kill Nixon went and shot George Wallace. Gerald Ford had a couple of shots taken at him. Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, of course, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, twice people, Barack Obama, three times. There was a letter laced with ricin sent to President Obama, a man who believed he was Jesus and that Obama was the Antichrist.
hit the White House with several rounds of fire from a semi-automatic rifle. That was in 2011. 2009, a plot to assassinate Obama by the Alliance of Civilizations, a summit in Istanbul, Turkey. It was discovered when a guy with Syrian origins carrying a forged Al Jazeera TV press credential was found. He confessed to the Turkish Security Secret Service that he was going to kill President Obama.
There have been over 30 assassination attempts.
Yeah. Imagine,
30.
Imagine. Imagine. And imagine what would have happened had this actually been accomplished yesterday. I haven't heard anybody speculate on that. I mean, just throw out, what do you think we would be talking about today?
It's almost Kiefer Sutherland series level
right.
talk. Yeah. I mean, you lose a tenth of one of the parties, by the way. The majority is gone, right? I mean, and that's I know it's a minor political point there on the side of that, but I mean, 3 weeks later, when bills are coming up to vote, before until these people are all replaced, there's no majority for Republicans.
And what would Congress and the Senate be saying in the next week? Remember, after 9/11, we got Department of Homeland Security. What kind of crackdown would happen if you would have killed a tenth of the GOP? What would the president be saying? Mm-hmm. What would Congress be saying? What would the media be saying? What would we be saying? Who would we be today had this guy been successful yesterday? They were not the only ones that dodged a bullet, America. We were as well. And I think we were given a chance to self-reflect on how are we going to talk to one another. So I want to go there next, and I want to show you something that is early, but I want to show you something that we are working on. I will raise my voice. I will hold
your hand, because we are one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
Hey, before we get into what we can do, I think it's important to start with the correction of the New York Times today. The New York Times has issued a correction to what they had printed about Gabby Giffords. Do you want to go over that? This is unusual and remarkable, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite unusual, especially from, because, I mean, they do issue corrections a lot of times on kind of meaningless stuff, you know, details. They do issue a lot of corrections. To correct one of their editorials, one of the main points they were making is pretty freaking significant. Here's what the correction reads. An earlier version of this editorial incorrectly stated that a link existed between political incitement and the 2011 shooting of Representative Gabby Giffords. In fact, no such link was established.
That's amazing.
I don't know how it gets to print. I don't know how they don't know that before they put the actual editorial up. But, I mean, I'm glad they corrected it, and it is important. There is absolutely zero evidence. In fact, it is provable that this had nothing to do with it. I mean, you know, to the point of he was obsessing about Gabby Giffords 3 years before the ad came out. You know, and there's, you know, if any, he had any leaning, as we said, an acquaintance called him a liberal.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was not a political assassination. It was not that. I mean, this is a guy who believed grammar was a conspiracy.
Yeah. Yesterday.
It's almost incomprehensible what
yesterday,
he believed.
It was a political assassination attempt. Yesterday, it was about politics, but it had nothing to do with Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders' rhetoric or anything else. This guy was nuts. This guy believed what he believed, and he's the one who loaded the gun, got the gun, lived in his van for 2 weeks. I mean, the guy was nuts, period. It was politically motivated. Who had anything to do with that? Did Rachel Maddow wind him up?
No, he tweeted about Rachel Maddow. He tweeted about Ed Schultz.
I will tell you this.
All his shows.
If you buy into that, then you better check his Facebook and what he tweeted and what he Facebooked about. A lot of stories from Russia Today.
Yep, Russia Today is another one.
So was he wound up by the Russians?
And I don't know if this has been widely reported, but he was also pretty much, he was very pro-Sanders, anti-Clinton. mm-hmm. right? Like he was that left-wing socialist, once Bernie, but not Hillary type of guy. But he loved a lot of these left-wing shows. Is it their fault? No, of course not. It is not their fault at all. It's not Rachel Maddow's fault. It's now, nobody on MSNBC's fault.
You could make the case that the uber left, just like the uber right, they do want revolution. And he may have been a supporter of the Antifa movement. I don't know.
There are groups certainly that do advocate for violence,
revolution.
And those groups
wouldn't it be refreshing if the left did the same thing we're doing right now? Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't it be?
You give it a balanced look at it, a fair and balanced. Since Fox just dropped that, I guess we can keep it. We can take it from them. We got a fair and balanced look at.
Did they say what they were replacing it with?
I think most watched. Most trusted.
Isn't the most trusted name in news? Isn't that the CNN most trusted?
I don't know, but Fox has actually won every poll along those lines for years now. So maybe they're just going to take it from them. I don't know.
And there were some examples today. For example, of the Jared Lee Loeffner thing. You know, you said, wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah.
Chris Hayes, for example, on MSNBC. When that came out, people on the right were criticizing, how can you tie this? And he said, let me step up here and say that's completely nuts. I mean, these are tough examples. It's hard to do that when you're on the left in a moment like this. And those people should be given credit. We should also criticize the people who don't do that and who break the double, you know, who create a double standard for themselves and blame the right for 2011 and don't do it here. When here, it actually, there's at least a tie.
Right.
Jared Lee Loeffner didn't support Sarah Palin. There is an absolute, that is provable. Here we have a situation where this person did support all these left-wing causes, but that still doesn't make them responsible. That is not the way this works.
Right. So it is really easy. It's really easy on the left to do what the New York Times did at first. It's really hard for them to issue the correction. It is really hard for people on MSNBC to come out and say, look, just like with Gabby Giffords, it was crazy then, it's crazy now. It's really hard for people on the right to say that and not throw stones, because everything depends on clicks now. Everything depends on ratings. I mean, it was really interesting to listen to Bill O'Reilly talk about ratings earlier this week. He's on with us tomorrow, by the way. But when he was on with us, he talked about ratings and how everything is done for ratings. Well, how do you get ratings? You get ratings by dividing people. You get ratings by calling out a boogeyman, because that's what people want. They want the red meat. So who are we going to be able to work with? Who can we trust to give us the news and give it to us straight? Well, people like Jake Tapper, who were consistent then and are consistent now. Those are the these are the times that we can learn who's trustworthy. Who's going to say it when it was tough?
Let me give you a little flashback here, which is perhaps maybe the best example of this we haven't even discussed since this whole terrible tragedy happened. This is back in 2010. A couple hosts on the program, Pat Gray, Stu Bergier, filling in for Mr. Glenn Beck that particular day. And there was a shooting, 8 people killed at a workplace. And we talked about it. I said, a guy like that, who's a little bit unstable anyway, can't help but react to the constant pressure of Keith Olbermann on the air on MSNBC talking about all the racism there is out there, because that was his complaint. And then we said Keith Olbermann was responsible. Keith Olbermann was responsible for the shooting. And Media Matters did a big report about how we were blaming Keith Olbermann for the shooting. What an unbelievable charge. How dare you? Of course, they cut out the next paragraph of in next few seconds where I said, obviously, we're making a point here. Let's move that to the case of the Tea Party members. They're constantly convinced the government is after them, and they're going to come take their guns. Well, who's always talking about that? Glenn Beck. So therefore, he's responsible for every time anyone does anything. They actually had to issue a correction because they edited Media Matters, issued a correction, because what we were saying at that time, when it was hard for us, was, you know what? Keith Olbermann is not responsible for a murder. He's not. He can say anything he wants in a political context outside of actually saying specifically go murder people. And it has nothing to do with a shooter. Media Matters intentionally cut that off and later got caught and had to issue correction about it. And here we are years later where the same crap happens from many of the same people. And, you know, we have to choose whether who, you know, what kind of people we want to be. Do we want to be the people who actually stand up and say and can live with ourselves and sleep at night knowing that we have consistent principles? Or do we just want to throw away around the same crappy accusations the other side does in those moments?
I know which I choose, and I'm going to show you how to do it when we come back. Thing. It's fighting an addiction to do the right thing.
Right.
And, but that's why great people are remembered. Because if it was easy, everybody would have done it. It takes a special class of people. And if you didn't happen to see the show, my show today, the last 15 minutes talked about something that we're working on. And I want to bring you in.
Right.
You know, I talked to you about coming into my office tomorrow. Because we're going to work on something as a company and as a team. This is going to be really hard to do.
People who.
This is from last night's Dana show. I urge you to watch last night's show at 5 o'clock. You can watch it on demand. The last half hour, I mean, the whole thing was pretty good, but the last half hour really kind of got to a chalkboard, and I showed you, you know, we're tearing each other apart, and so what are we going to do about it? And I want to go over a little bit of this now. We are at Mercury. I have spent the last 4 months working on some things. And I'm going to drill this over and over and over again because as I do it, I understand it even more. There's really three or four books that I would like you to read, and we'll talk about those in the coming days. But one of them is called The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt or Haidt. And he is a New York liberal NYU professor who's not liberal anymore. He said at the beginning of his book, I thought before I started doing all this research that I was a deep progressive. As it turns out, I'm not. But I didn't understand the right because they never spoke my language. I didn't think they cared about people. Now, here's an educated man and an honest guy who says, as I started doing research, I realized, wait, that's not who they are. And the reason why he came to that is because a couple of people started speaking his language. In talking to him, you know, off air and talking to him about his theories, I found out that I'm one of the guys that was speaking his language, and he was shocked because I was one of the guys he was studying because I'm so hate-filled. And what he realized is, wait, I think I've misunderstood this entire thing. Now, he's come up to explain what's happening to us. And he was looking for a way for people to be able to reach out to each other, but he doesn't think he found it. I do. And it's a fantastic read that describes what's happening to the human brain. And how he describes this, this is an older theory, but he's really kind of made this, he's brought it to life. What happens is our brain, our choices, so much of our choices are guttural. We're presented, for instance, I don't know if you know this is crazy, 5,000 advertisements a day. We see 5,000 advertisements a day. Now, that doesn't even seem possible. But that's the average that the Americans see every single day. So we're weeding those things out because how many of them actually make it to us recognizing that's an ad? We make 15,000 yes or no choices every single day. I don't think that's even possible, but at least 15,000 on average. So much of what we do is what he calls the elephant part of the brain. And the elephant is this big, huge, immovable object that reason is sitting on top of. And reason is sitting on top of this elephant, and it's really rarely consulted by the elephant because the elephant is just moving. And it's moving based on what it has experienced, what its upbringing was, what its first reaction is, what first impressions are. You know, you meet somebody and your first impression is, I don't know if I really trust them. I don't know if I like them. Sometimes if you have to, you will say, wait a minute, let me reason this out. But most times you just kind of let that go and it builds one way or the other. Well, that's the elephant. And then before you know it, you just don't trust that guy and you're not really sure why. I just don't trust him. That's the elephant. When it comes to critical decisions, especially when fear is introduced, we know that fear shuts reason down. And that's because the elephant just says, through experience, we're going that way. And the writer, because this part of the brain, this intuition and this X factor in the brain is so big and so lumbering, the writer, the reason, can rarely turn it. Now, it can be turned, but it usually is turned not by a great argument. We always say, how are we losing? We have the great argument. Well, it's not turned by the great argument. It's actually more likely to have the rider stop and wake up and tell the elephant, stop for a minute, from peer pressure. It's more likely to be stopped when a bunch of people that the elephant trusts says, you got this wrong. You got to listen. You have this wrong. That's really the only time that you have a chance that the elephant stops. The other time is when the elephant meets somebody new and likes them and has a general feeling of this is a good guy. And that person gently challenges the elephant's belief in a kind and friendly way. And then the elephant kind of looks up to the rider and says, does that make sense? But that rarely happens. Does this make sense so far? Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So my job has been for the last year to figure out two things. How do we talk to the American people? How do we talk to them in a different way when so much rhetoric and so much fear and anger is happening? Remember, I've made a pledge to myself, and I've asked you to make this pledge years ago. I will not go over the cliff with the rest of humanity. So now, here we are. Humanity is going over a cliff. How do we stop our friends? I've said to you for many years, you're going to have to be the one that says, stop, don't go that way. Well, when they're panicked, when they're fearful, and the elephant is in charge, how do you wake the rider up? Well, first, you have to be a trusted friend. You have to be kind. The best book you can read right now, this is according to Jonathan Haidt, one of the best ways to do it is start with How to Win Friends and Influence People, Norman Vincent Peale. Because the whole thing was actually care about the other person. Listen to them. Listen to them. I would have behaved much differently in the last 18 months had I not been so arrogant, and I would have listened to you more. But I didn't. And what I was talking about was principles, and those principles are great, and we all agreed on those principles. And I thought I was talking to the writer. What I didn't realize is that you are struggling so hard with insurance. You're struggling so hard. I know the chaos, what you're feeling. But honestly, I thought it was at more at our level, that we're looking at the news and can't figure it out, and that I didn't see you. I was too egotistical. I saw me. And that ended in disaster. That's not good. Many of us aren't friends now. Many of the people who are with me for a long time, they're not friends anymore. Well, that's not, how did that happen? My fault. Okay, I got that. So now, how do we repair that? And how do we now reach out to people who have never liked any of us? I'm going to explain this quickly. It's called the Moral Foundations Theory. And what he has done, and I urge you to watch it on the Blaze TV. If you have a subscription, just watch it right now. This is actually in my office, and this is something that I'm actually taking the staff through every day. And we've just started. But let me just show you how it works. There are five moral foundations that our society generally runs on. And it's loyalty and betrayal, sanctity and disgust, authority and subversion, care and harm, liberty and oppression. So the flip side of five moral pillars. What Jonathan Haidt found in his research is that conservatives have loyalty and betrayal, sanctity and disgust, authority and subversion. We have those strongly. Liberals have care and harm and liberty and oppression. And they really have care and oppression. They don't focus on liberty as much as they focus on oppression. Libertarians happen to have all five. And you'll see libertarians always seem to get a bunch of liberals to join them. Why? Because they're the only ones speaking from a place of authenticity on care and harm, liberty and oppression. Conservatives do have all five, but they don't exercise all five very often. And on top of that, liberals only have two, and they never go up to the top three. So let me just show you how this works. When it comes to health care, they argue health care, you don't care. You want to harm the people. You want to kill people. You don't care about anybody. You don't care about children. When it comes to school vouchers, you don't care about children. You don't care about them having education. You know, you want to cut welfare. You don't care about people. They're all there, care and harm. When it comes to things like, let's take moms at home. What do we argue? We argue moms because that's a sacred job. We're arguing sanctity. We look at motherhood as a sacred job, a sacred responsibility with your child. And the children, that's a sacred duty to us as parents. That's not what they're arguing. They're arguing oppression. You are oppressing the woman by making her stay at home. And they mean that as much as we mean it's sacred. But they don't relate to sacred responsibilities, and I'm speaking generally, and we don't relate to oppression, speaking generally. We don't relate to that. So we're using different languages. It's like going to Mexico and speaking French. So what we have to do is we have to move, for instance, under sanctity and disgust. Have you ever noticed how disgusting the left can get in things? Like, there's nothing too vile. Occupy Wall Street. There's a protest. We can't relate to them because they're crapping on cars and smearing feces on things. There's no disgust that is too low for them because they don't have the sanctity bar. We talk about sex, marriage, and God. We're up at sanctity, but they bring the sex, marriage, and God down to oppression. That's why we're not able to understand each other. We literally are speaking two different languages.
And somebody has to master the second language. And I am asking you to help us and let us help you master a second language and begin to speak a different language. Because if there's enough of us doing it, we can stop humanity from going over the cliff. And we're never going to win with just a great argument because we're not speaking the same language. Back in just a second.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Wow. The judge in the Bill Cosby trial has ordered them back to deliberations. They are deadlocked. Wow.
Four days?
Just let the man go home.
Huh?
Just let the man go home.
What are you talking about? Let the man go home.
If he's guilty, you don't let him go home because you'd like to show 30 years ago.
I don't know. I like pudding.
Well, Jeffy does like pudding.
I do like pudding. And Jell-O pudding.
Yeah, it's, if he's acquitted, holy cow, what a turn of events that one is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know. It seems like that they really wanted to convict him because they believe he's guilty. So they were aggressive prosecution. They used an aggressive prosecution
tactic.
They
lied a lot.
Not even a lie, but like they bent. You know, there were a lot of statute of limitations, and think about this. The reason we know about this is because a sealed deposition was leaked, and then they decided to use it anyway against him.
Yeah.
Now, that is highly questionable of whether that should actually happen. If you have a sealed deposition, it's supposed to be sealed. Somehow it got leaked and got to the media, and then they're like, well, now the media knows about it. Like, of course we can use it. I mean, there have been some questionable lines here. Of course, if he's a rapist, you want him behind bars. And, we do have a process here, and we got to follow it. So I don't know. Heck, I could go either way.
If he goes, maybe he can go to the golf courses and look for the rapist.
The real rapist?
And Nicole Brown's killer.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.